The backs of my eyes burn as I fold her up again, tarnishing her with a smudge of Essie's blood as I work her back into shape. My fingers linger over the final fold, one I haven't pressed before. The activation line that will return Nee to her sender. My gaze lifts to Essie, still and silent on the cedar. Dead. My fingers pinch of their own accord, crimping the fold into place. Nee wiggles to life, her flapping motions smooth and mechanical, void of everything that makes her, her. That ache in my chest intensifies as she glides toward the window in a steady flutter without another neck nudge or giddy swirl, and I know she's gone, that her soul has slipped free, and that whatever magic tethered her to me, it's not there anymore. Just like Essie's not here anymore. Just like Fallon. I cut off the thought, clear my throat, and force myself to watch Nee pass through the window and disappear from sight into the merciless sky, stuffing down the temptation to rip off my ring, to beg Claude to bring her back to me with a push of wind. No. I move to the kitchen and pack the trough with rags that trail over the edge, making a path to the rug. Then I pull a bottle of sterilizing spirits from the cupboard of mending supplies, crack the lid, and douse the rags. The rug. The blanket keeping Essie warm. I douse the corner of another small cloth, tuck it in my sheath with a stick of flint, then move toward the window, pausing by the cedar where I drop to a kneel. Brushing my hand through Essie's hair, I take in the sharp slopes of her ethereal face. Too beautiful for this world. Too pure. I love you, I whisper, mapping her freckles, storing the vision of her somewhere safe where I can treasure it forever. I'm going to take away the cold, okay? The silence that follows is a cruel taunt that rips at the contents of my chest, like a molten maw is caught within me, slashing, feasting. With a final kiss on her temple, I force myself to turn, to climb out the window and up the blood-stained wall, sullying my hands with more of her. I pull myself into the wind tunnel, stare stabbed at the drop chute as I push to my feet. Feed me to the fire where I'll never be cold again. My face crumbles, then knots into a savage twist despite the reluctant shudder tilled from my ashen past. The thought of burning Essie's body, it makes me want to bunch up and scream. The idea of casting her in flames goes against the grain of everything that shaped me into who I am this day. But I will not cower from this fire she asked me for. I will not fail her again. I pull the cloth and flint from my sheath and force myself forward a single wobbly step, hand trembling, soul squirming. Teeth gritted, I scour the flint across the stone wall, catching the spark on the cloth. It bursts into flames so fast they nip at my skin, and panic wraps its hands around my throat, squeezing so hard I can barely breathe. But I maintain my trembling hold on the cloth, forcing three strangled words past my chattering teeth. I'm sorry, Essie. I'm sorry I couldn't keep you safe. That I never said I love you before you were dying in my arms. I'm sorry I wasn't the family you deserved. I flick the flaming cloth down the chute, followed by the flint, staggering back from the blow of heat that blasts my face, choking on the pour of smoke. There's the sound of glass shattering, and I squeeze my eyes shut, picturing her jars of tinctures popping, one by one. The heat intensifies, and I picture the rug burning, the smell of fried flesh coming to me too soon. Too fucking soon. A strangled sob squeezes up my throat as I stagger back from the heat. The smell, clapping my hand upon my mouth. Something clatters against my boot. I open my eyes, looking to the ground splotched red, to the bloody blade resting by my foot and the leather satchel beside it. Black. Essie's. My heart lurches, like something just tossed it against my ribs so hard I'm surprised they didn't fracture. Tentatively, I bend down and flick the mouth of the bag aside to peer in, seeing a book and a frosted jar. A book she must have gotten from the library. From the Undercity. I don't bother opening the jar, knowing exactly what's within. The final ingredient she required to bind the diamond cap to my tooth. The cap she'd made to protect me. My lungs constrict. I reach for the dagger Essie must have pulled from her abdomen. The dagger that did this to her. That took her from me. I'm about to sheath it next to my own when something catches my eye. A slithering motion on the flat face of the blade. Every cell in my body stills as Essie's blood congeals into a collection of ruddy letters. Undercity. R-Z. A summons. For me. From Rek Zaros. The blade slips from my hand, clatters to the ground. He's narrowed his eyes on me, discovered where I live. Taken down Essie to lure me out. Somehow. Which means it's my fault she snuck out to the Undercity. My fault she got stabbed, then returned to our home rather than finding a flesh thread to heal her. My fault she bled out on the couch until she stopped moving. My fault she's burning. Dead. A guttural groan ruptures from deep within, bruising my insides as it wrestles free. As the realization crouches upon my chest, slashes me open, then stuffs its maw in and chews, masticating my lungs, my heart, my soul. My face crumbles, shoulders, spine, knees. I heap upon the ground, deflating just as fast as my rupturing resolve, crushed by a mountain of suffocating guilt. Certain I'm being slit through the chest in long, jagged severs. Again. Again. I flinch with each agonizing slash, my gaze dropping to the blood-soaked hands I used to lead Essie from the dark bowels of the Undercity, so determined I could give her a better life. I promised I'd keep her safe. Instead, I gave her a grave. And I can't do this. I can't fucking do this anymore. Something within me shifts, and a booming collision jars me from the inside out, my bones locking from the impact. A thunderous crack ricochets from deep beneath my ribs before a sharp explosion pierces through me, shattering my insides into 1,000 icy shards. My body temperature plummets so fast I hear my heart slow. Like it's wrestling slushy blood through my veins, one sluggish beat at a time. I inhale a shudder of air that feels too warm, like pulling lava into my frosted lungs. It's coming. A tear shreds down my cheek as I lose sensation in my fingers and toes, my arms and legs. Part of me wants to fight it, to be strong for Essie. Despite the fact that I've never felt weaker in my life. To tear the fucking world to shreds until I find Rek Zaros and string him up. Slit him 1,000 times. Wait for him to heal. Do it all over again. But there's a bigger part of me that's still lying on that cedar inside. Tucked around my young, miraculous, beautiful friend who just lost her life because I loved her. A bigger part of me that's burning right alongside her. And that part, it's tired, lonely, lost, sad, more broken than I'll ever admit. That part of me just wants to stop and never start again. The icy anger inside me roars, its essence expanding with such ferocity my organs feel like they're being shoved aside. I lose sensation in my chest, and my face twists as I slip from my sight, falling backward into a frigid numb that swaddles me so tight I can't move, can't see, can't feel. A beautiful, blissful numb. So pure, like a cold, silken bandage for my soul. So soft, I can almost forget I won't get the glory of killing Rex Zaros and avenging Essie's death. But as I sink, curled into this frigid comfort, I grow calm, resolved. He deserves to be ripped limb from limb, to have his vertebrae crumbled, brain mulched, to have his insides pulverized by the strange, savage entity that exists within me. He deserves.
The Other. Chapter 15. The Other prowls through the Undercity. A dark, lofty excavation fixed with a web of bridges that reach across the hollow, only a scatter of torches to sketch out the shape of things.
Not that she needs light.
Her inky, glitter-kissed eyes glint in the dark as she hunts, clutching the blade used to bleed the young one until she bled no more. Breathed no more.
Was no more.
Bringing the hilt to her nose, she sniffs, long and deep, catching another hint of this murderous male's smoky, leathery scent.
He would beg for mercy before the end. Of that, she was certain.
Not that it would earn him any. Eyes wild like her bloody thoughts, the other creeps down an uneven path, scouring the cavern's vast expanse, while numerous stairs slice across her too fragile skin. Those of shade-born predators who've snuck in through collapsed mine shafts, who also have exceptional vision, hibernating in dark corners, eating their prey in peace, and languishing in nests of bones. The other does not pay them heed.
She holds no ill blood over those who killed to survive, to feed, or to protect their young.
But those who kill to hurt the one she loves? The one she nests within?
They deserve to be torn apart piece by piece, skin peeled free like strips of bark, feasted on while their warm heart still pumps.
However, the other stills, gaze dropping to the scrap of material tangled around the thin, vulnerable neck of her precious, pliant host, wondering if she should use it to cover her face. Rave is always so careful to camouflage when she's spilling blood, strange as it is.
Blood should be worn with honor, a boast of fresh meat and full bellies, of predators gone. But the other respects her host, despite her small hands and tiny teeth that are near hopeless for chewing things with any true substance.
She decides to adhere to the odd tradition, frowning as she gathers the material and tucks it around her mouth and nose.
There.
She charges down a jagged stairway, deeper into the dark. Pausing midway over a bridge, she peers at another stretch of stone that cuts across the eerie chasm directly beneath, head cocked to the side. Perhaps the armored soldiers flattened against the walls of twin alcoves on either ends of the bridge below believe they are hidden.
Not from her. She was born in the darkness.
To her, their bodies are luminous, as if lit by the torches they must have extinguished when they laid their little trap. The other feeds on the squishy sounds their hearts make, digesting their near silent whispers.
Think I'll get in trouble if I piss over the edge? I wouldn't do it, not unless you want to risk getting your balls fried.
The other scowls at their crude language, wondering if possible mates of their own fey species find that sort of thing attractive.
She most certainly does not.
It's It's been a while. I think nobody's coming.
A brief pause, then.
Perhaps the Oth bitch was the one he already stabbed.
Was his informant certain she had black hair?
Long, black, and straight, skin like snow. Heard it with my own ears.
She'll come. I can feel it in my bones. The other drops into a low crouch and leans forward, claiming a clearer view.
What if she doesn't bring reinforcements and this was all a waste of time for a single rebel? We should have just found a way to storm her dwelling. Then I wouldn't be standing here ready to piss myself.
Nobody in their right mind would come down here alone. But if she does, at least she'll be easy to dispose of.
I'd like to be home before their eyes. I'm fucking starved.
The other decides these Fae deserve the grisly end that's coming for them.
Though she regrets not having more time to draw it out.
Make them weep.
She scours every one of the soldiers while pulling deep whiffs of the hot, humid air, seeking the one who stamped his scent on the blade, frowning. This wreck is smarter than the ones waiting in such obvious places. No matter. He, too, will be lured out by blood. She cracks a smile.
Lots of it.
Silently skulking farther along the bridge, the other tucks the dagger away, pausing atop the group of heavily armored males at the northern end. She rips the iron ring off her finger, opening herself to the creators, to songs she studied from below the crust of her icy lake, whenever they howl, squeal, or shriek down from above. She does not cower from the clamor against her eardrums. She wears pain like a safety net, one with the terrible tunes penetrating her small, too delicate ears and violent mind. She leaps, falls, lands in a crouch before a group of unassuming males, hands clawed, a savage sort of glee spread across her face. She sings Cloud's strangling tune before the beaded soldiers get a chance to speak a single word. It's not a gentle song.
The other does not leave room for mercy.
There are no sips of breath for gasped begging. Instead, she minces their lungs in an instant, reveling in their horrified agony. Blood erupts from the soldiers' mouths, their bulging eyes leaking ruddy tears as they claw at their throats, some falling where they stand. Others try to escape, staggering into walls or off the bridge, dead long before they hit the ground. The other rips twin daggers free of her bandolier, spinning, flicking them through the air. The blades slice toward the far side of the bridge, into the eyes of two soldiers just beyond the reach of her strangling tune before they have a chance to wield their own words. They crumble where they stand. Another soldier trips on the corpses, tumbling over the edge. The sound of his body breaking against a lower bridge thumps through the chaos. A ruthless smile spreads across the other's face, no longer reminiscent of her fiercely beautiful host, now sharp and savage.
Monstrous.
More blades whiz through the air, the other's deadly skyborne blows finding home in flesh and bone, slotting into the frail slits between sturdy plates of armor. Thud, thud, thud. Soldiers fall in a clatter of metal and meat, while the other sings the air into nothingness, stripping the oxygen and nulling the soldier's ability to sing, making the atmosphere inhospitable for the flames her opponents need to see what she's doing, where her blades are being aimed.
They thought the darkness was their ally, but it was their ruin.
As it so often is for many who underestimate the shroud of a sunless sky. A storm of unforeseen reserve troops spill from the southern tunnel, screaming, charging.
One orders the bridge to split before the other can pulverize his lungs, and cracks weave through the stone. The bridge jerks. She falters, hissing through bared teeth, catching her footing with a fist firmly planted on the rock.
Plitiano Virina,
she screams, whipping up her head.
Plitiano Viri.
Claude churns into a squealing dance of snipped breaths and collapsing airways, barging into soldiers' chests in gusty shoves, tossing them off the crumbling bridge with a spray of stone. Many try to retreat, though only a few make it back into the tunnel. The other laughs, pushing to a stand, hunting the clutch of deserters, her swift steps gaining ground until she's close enough to sink iron daggers into the back of their necks with a flick of her wrist. She leaps, pouring upon another like a seething wave, ripping his head back and slashing his throat. Blood sprays, coating her hands and face. She charges the remaining two, salivating for the taste of their blood on her lips. She draws closer.
Closer.
The tunnel opens, and she passes into a small circular cavern lit by so many flaming sconces she's forced to squint, her sooty eyes not attuned to the harsh glare. The hairs on the back of her neck lift. A loud clanking has her whipping around to see a door of metal bars now blocking the exit, locking her in. She hisses, spinning in a churn of black hair, blood, and spitting rage, appraising the many soldiers lining the cavern's wall, arm to arm, red helmets hiding their faces and swords braced at their hips. A trap.
A fight ring.
Some of them sing spitting, hissing tunes, flames whipping from elemental containment welds and lit sconces, spearing straight for her. With a lashing sneer, the other sings Claude's suffocating tune.
Glitiano viri, atane del tena, melee, Claude, melee.
The ribboning flames sputter into oblivion. As with most of the lit sconces dotted around the walls, filling the cavern with a blissful gloom. Many soldiers drop to their knees, clawing at their throats. The other descends on one of the two who beat her here, slashing a blade through the gap in his armor. His intestines bulge from the gory hack, and she's on the next in an instant, wrapping her limbs around his head and lashing it to the side. His neck snaps with a satisfying crack, and he falls to the ground in a floppy heap at her feet. Surveying her remaining opponents, she releases a deep, bellowing word that gouges a path up her throat, like she just heaved a sharp stone from the pit of her gut.
Vobanth!
The cavern shakes with Baldur's answer, a jagged cleft prying the ground apart, yawning like the crooked maw of some great beast. Soldiers scream, hands whipping out to steady themselves against the rough-hewn wall, some falling into the grinding abyss, crushed by the shifting stone to the tune of breaking bones and popping skulls. Blood and brain matter spray from the rumbling sever as it chews. The soldiers stagger, looking between each other, the stench of urine wafting through the air as they appear to realize they've trapped themselves inside a cage with a monster. A fierce, powerful monster who should have two beads hanging from her lobe rather than the null clip in the tip of her tapered ear. If they were aware she only knew how to correctly pronounce a few of Baldur's words, perhaps they wouldn't be so scared. Even so, the other preens at the fear in their eyes, a sharp smile splitting her blood-splattered face into something charmed from the depths of a gory terror.
Such
paltry opponents. She will crush them all, then bathe in their blood before she ruptures free of this cage and hunts this wreck, smothered in the groom of his fallen brethren. There's a sharp pinch in her right shoulder.
And the clamorous tunes penetrating her small, fragile eardrums hush.
Gone.
The other frowns. The wet groans of dying Fae would be music to her ears.
If she weren't familiar with this particular form of silence.
She slaps her hand on the back of her shoulder, fingering the stinging puncture, frowning when the tips come away with the smell of her precious host's blood, eyes widening as she realizes she's been shot.
With iron.
She spins toward the barred entryway, gaze narrowing on the Fae behind it, armed with a slingshot that rests against the bars.
Pointed at her.
Tossing a black hood off his head, the male shucks his cloak to reveal black leather pants and a loose white shirt that's partially undone at the neck. The other takes in his long pale hair and cerulean eyes, the stick of rolled parchment pinched between his lips, leaking smoke that wafts around his face. The red and brown beads hanging from his lobe. Most of all, she notes the lax confidence in the way he holds himself, hip resting against the edge of the tunnel like he's enjoying the scenery. Nostrils flared. The other tips her head and draws deep, catching a hint of his leathery, smoke-ridden scent. The same dense smell on the dagger still tucked in her sheath. The veins in her temple and throat bulge, jaw trembling with her welling rage.
Wreck Zaros. You're the one who killed our Essie.
She growls, her voice a graveled discord of strained vocals and feral disposition.
The little redhead, Wreck drawls, pulling the weapon from the bars and dumping it on the ground.
Snagging the smoking stick between his lips, he draws a deep breath, his next words a thick pour of white.
She screeched like a strangled bird when I slid that blade into her gut.
The other sneers, charging toward the bars.
Stis steni tek ach vach fia,
Wreck spits past curled lips, as if the words burned a trail up his throat before they singed free. Flames stream from the remaining torches, ribbons of it now churning around the other in billowing swirls that nip too close to her vulnerable skin, capturing her in a fist of fire impossible to escape, not without a flesh thread nearby to mend the burns she would endure. Hands crunching into fists, she studies Wreck's every move, the fluttered pulse in his neck, the way his lean body shifts as he unlocks the bars and swaggers into the cavern, sharp features lit by the churning flames. The bloody spurs on the backs of his boots rattling every time he steps. His eyes glint with sadistic satisfaction while he takes the other in, then the bloody mess she made of his comrades. He clicks his tongue, pale brows inching up his forehead.
Impressive.
The other snarls, leaning dangerously close to the roaring inferno while sweat gathers on her brow and down the line of her spine. Teeth bared, she froths for his blood, for the feel of his flesh shredding between her teeth, dismal as they are. Wreck presses the smoke stick between his lips, draws a languid puff, then flicks the butt away and pulls a coiled whip from where it's tethered to a hook at his hip. With a twitch of his wrist, the black tendril snaps through the blaze, binding the other in a rigid embrace that secures her arms to her sides, legs clamped together, as if cocooned by some silk-threading creature preparing her for feasting. She falls to her knees, hissing sharp breaths while Wreck charms his flames toward the torches lining the walls, releasing her from the fiery swirl, though bringing her no closer to the freedom she lost.
She lost?
Rek snatches the bloody veil, exposing her. His eyes widen as she snarls through clenched teeth, jerking against her binds.
She lost.
Not at all what I was expecting, Rek murmurs, frowning. His hand comes forward, knuckles grazing her cheek. Seems a shame to feed such a pretty, powerful thing to the dragons. With a snap of her teeth, she snags his finger and bites.
Hard.
Rek roars, trying to yank his hand free. The remaining soldiers bellow, charging toward their growling prisoner while she gnaws through the knobbly knuckle with the fervor of a famished beast. It pops free, the severed tip dropping into her mouth. Rek stumbles back and lifts his trembling hand to his face, blood streaking down his arm, onto the ground. Drip, drip. She spits the tip, boasting a smile that's all teeth and blood. Rek blinks, stark eyes focusing on the gory stub before he tips his head and roars with laughter, abusing the sound until it's bruised and weary. The other's smile falls. Rek locks eyes with her again, crunches his bloody, disfigured hand into a ball, pulls his arm back, and swings his fist at her face.
A blinding explosion of pain before darkness consumes her.
Diary entry. Elowen Nevan, age 9 phases, 5,030 phases after stone. It's freezing on the outskirts of Netherin, but for a moonplume egg to incubate, it must stay right here in the cold until it starts to rock. Then I must pack clumps of ice around it and wait for the hatchling to free itself from the shell. I must do all this on my own, because Hadion can't. Because I found him sleeping at the bottom of a crevice, cuddling his stolen moonplume egg, unable to move his legs. I shook him awake, told him I'd get Mommy and Poppy. He said I'd die if I took the sleigh home myself, that his egg would die too. That really worried me. The sleigh can't make it up this far, so I built a snow hut to keep Hadion safe and warm while he sleeps himself better. Then I made 3 trips to the hatching hut on my own and moved all our things. I shook Hadion awake again and told him I'll try really, really hard to drag him out into the cold when his moonplume starts to hatch so he can bond with it. He touched my face, told me he loves me, and that he's glad I snuck onto his sleigh, then fell back into a really deep sleep. He's doing lots of sleeping. I'm starting to worry he won't wake, that his chest will suddenly stop moving. The thought makes my own chest hurt. Makes me want to cry. I won't. I refuse. I have to be strong for Hadion because he can't be strong for himself. But if he doesn't wake, I've decided I'm not going home. I can't get him on a sleigh, and I won't leave him here in the cold and the dark on his own. He hates being alone, and he really hates the dark. I miss Mommy and Poppy.
Rave. Chapter 17. I'm immersed in an icy sleep that's soft like a wispy tail bound around my body, drifting within the tide of nothingness. Beautiful, hypnotic nothingness. Until something snaps close to my ear, ripping me to the surface and dumping me into the aching scream of reality. Hot, hurting, heavy reality. My ankles are shackled, and all my weight hangs from my wrists that are tied together, stretched skyward, my shoulders threatening to pop from their sockets. The right ones pinned with a piercing hurt that makes me certain I've been stabbed or poked with something still lodged in the bone. The pain is a drip in the barrel of aches, tormenting every muscle in my body, like I've been wrung at all angles, then shaken out like a washcloth. Even my jaw and gums ache, like I've been gnawing on something dense and chewy while my consciousness was huddled somewhere far away from the SE-sized ache in my heart. Running my tongue across my teeth, I feel a stringy piece of something wedged in the hairline gap between my sharp canine and the tooth right next to it. Shivering, I decide I'd rather not know what that is. I'm only able to pry one of my lids upward, the other a swell of pain, my eyeball throbbing. I groan, taking in my smudged surroundings through bloody ropes of hair. My leather sheaths and bandolier are lumped on the floor in a pile not too far away, most of my weapons missing. Fuck. My attention lifts to the plain stone walls garnished with a few lit sconces. There's a wooden door directly ahead, from which a trail of ruddy gore leads right here, to where I'm hanging. My gaze drops to my skin suit, previously tan, now drenched red. Blood red. My heart plummets. Whatever happened during my otherwise peaceful blackout landed me trussed up in this unfamiliar room, covered in blood, with a stringy piece of something stuck between my teeth and a likely fractured eye socket. This is not looking good. I peer internally, dropping toward my lake, jolting at the sight. The usually smooth, frosted expanse now a litter of ice shards and upturned bergs spearing skyward. What a mess. I hightail it out of there, casting my gaze back on the small, muggy room's dewy walls. The back of my neck prickles, like somebody behind me just stepped up close. The rhythmic thud of heavy, clattering steps shatters the eerie silence, and I recall Essie's words. When he walked away, his boots made clattering sounds. My blood chills. The noise circles me like one of the Shade's notorious hushlings circling their prey, the deadly dance of a predator near the top of the food chain, a predator who has earned the right to play with their food before they crouch down to feast. I see his boots first. Heels bridled by metal spurs that are caked in enough flesh and blood, I'm snarling even before I lift my gaze to the male's face. Cold, calculating eyes, twin cerulean orbs, lock on me. Rek Zaros. He smiles.
There she is.
I jerk against my restraints so hard the flesh around my wrists splits, flushing with a burn that pales in comparison to the swollen ache in my chest. You killed Essie! My voice comes out fractured and cracked, bringing with it the taste of blood.
We've gone over this,
he drawls with a roll of his eyes, moving more into my line of sight, a pillar of lean muscle and smooth feline movements, the length of his iron-tipped whip trailing him like a tail.
If you want to catch a feral mutt, you must lure it with the right bait. One must be resourceful in my line of work. Much as you probably like to think you're special, it really is nothing personal.
I'll tell him the same as I'm carving into his chest after I free myself from these fucking restraints. Though it'll be a lie, he'll glean when I pop a fresh bubble of laughter with every slice. Because it is personal. Very. I jerk against the ropes tied around my wrists again. Again.
At least it wasn't personal until you bit off my finger,
he mutters, lifting his right hand and waving the bandaged nub at me. I still, my tongue coming up to poke at the stringy thing threaded between my teeth. That makes sense. So too does my aching jaw. I quietly hope I didn't swallow the tip, remembering past instances when I've blanked out, then come to with a bellyache and a weird, gamey taste in my mouth. Best not to think about these things too hard. Wreck pauses before me to retrieve a leather pouch from his pocket, unrolling it, pinching out a smoke stick and tucking it between his lips.
So,
he says, the word muffled as he pulls a silver weld from another pocket and flicks back the lid, exposing the small, angry bulb of flame hidden within, now dancing from the crown of the instrument. He uses it to singe the tip of his stick, swathing his face in a puff of smoke.
You're a dual bead.
Breath flees my lungs so fast my expression almost twists into a cringe. Damn it. Seems my inner psychopath is paying attention, collecting powerful words it's used like rocks to weigh me to the bottom of this lake of doom. It's an effort not to sigh.
Am I really?
I force a bemused frown that makes my eye feel like it's about to pop. I thought they were just strange voices in my head. Weird. He lifts both brows.
I find that hard to believe.
Maybe you should use your imagination?
He sucks a sizzling draw, then blows his breath in my face, packing my lungs full of the thick, potent waft.
Go easy on those things, I say, barking out a cough. I don't want them mincing your lungs before I have the chance to do it myself.
Head tipping to the side, his stare narrows.
Your eyes are different. They were black earlier. Now they're blue.
You do have an imagination. Clever boy.
He grunts, still watching me as he draws another puff, pinching the stick with his injured hand, the next words released with a blow of smoke.
Kamori Daffodone, traveling bard from Aurig. What's your real name?
Die a slow, traumatic death, and perhaps I'll consider whispering it against your ear right before your heart gives out.
You're a handful.
His gaze drops to my bust, lifts again, lips curving into a slimy smile.
More than a handful, actually.
Much more than you can handle, you pathetic piece of shit.
He chuffs out a laugh and draws another drag.
I'm a greedy male.
If I have to listen to your drivel, at least tell me something I don't already know.
And you see, with this particular job, I get paid per head. So, my foul-mouthed bitch, I'm offering you the chance to avoid retribution for the soldiers you took from me. And for this,
he says, gesturing to his wounded hand. My attention drifts to his whip. Back to his eyes.
You think I'm scared of your little toy, Wreck?
You should be.
He boasts a lopsided grin that's all sharp canines and the promise of pain.
The iron tip bites.
I've seen bigger. But hey, if whipping a female makes you feel like a strong boy, then don't let me stomp your dreams. Don't worry, I can handle it. I've got enough balls for the both of us.
This time, when he laughs, it lacks any real substance. He flicks his hand. The whip slithers through the air at lightning speed, and breath bursts from my lungs as a lash of pain snaps at my hip, shredding through my skin suit and slitting skin. I squeeze my lips shut, chewing the urge to fill the space with a scream, body trembling. My flesh ignites with anticipation, preparing for the next strike that'll undoubtedly land.
Your lips are tight now,
he says, drawing another puff of his stick.
But if they weren't so loose while you were speaking to the musician at the Hungry Hollow, you wouldn't be in this predicament and your friend wouldn't be dead.
My heart skips a beat. Another. His words settling amongst my insides like the tips of flesh-shredding arrowheads. Levy. He's talking about Levy. Which means...
In turn, she handed you a runed note I used to track down your living quarters.
The room spins, my worrying mind unraveling so fast all the threads that usually hold me together get knotted and bunched until they're a tangled nest of knots. My details, in case you want to perform together again. Her lips had molded into a sad smile the moment she'd said those words, like they tasted bad. Creators. I didn't have to show her the orb. I would have gotten away without it. But I was in a rush, distracted, so fucking desperate to complete the mission I'd fought for. I'd been blind, stupid, selfish, and now Essie's dead. I groan, the fresh information a savage slice to the raw, exposed ache in my chest that hasn't yet had a chance to scab over.
Imagine my disappointment when I activated the tracking rune and realized the note didn't lead me to the flourish,
Rex says, pointing the smoke stick at me and tapping off the ash.
Meaning you're just a grunt, the one they use to do the dirty work. You see, what I need is somebody with close-knit ties to the Elding, or at the very least, knows the location of the flourish. Can you help me out with that?
Serene. I dip my chin, looking at him from beneath my brows, thoughts tumbling over a bristled terrain. Much as I hate the bitch, I could never hand her over to this sadistic prick. Not only would it endanger Ruse, but if this monster got hold of the vial that hangs around her neck, so many others I respect would fall victim to the crown. Not an option. Ever.
Oh, don't look at me like that.
He puffs his stick to a nub, then drops it, crushing it beneath the heel of his boot.
We both know that once I hand you over to the crown, the Guild of Nobles will make you an example, which will not end well for you, my pretty feral mutt. However, in this room,
he says, caressing the handle of his whip,
you have a unique opportunity to avoid that fate, should you decide to, I don't know.
He tips his head from side to side.
Loosen those lips again. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yes, I bite out from between clenched teeth, and I heartily decline. Frowning, he crouches so I'm peering down my nose at him, garnishing me with a look of confusion.
I don't think you understand. I'm giving you a chance to live, you daft cunt.
You're mistaken. I know the sick, twisted game you're playing. I simply refuse to partake. So you can flick your little toy at me and shred my skin, but the only thing I'll spill is blood. My words echo through the space, bouncing off the walls. I draw my mouth full of saliva and spit. It slaps upon his eye, and I get the glory of watching his upper lip wobble, a frown shadowing his face. He reaches up to wipe away the bloody slur.
So be it,
he sneers, shoving up. In four short steps, he's behind me, gripping hold of my skin suit. Something cool and sharp slides down my spine. There's the sound of splitting fabric as the garment is torn like a sheet of wrapping parchment, my pebbling flesh bared. A blade clatters across the ground, the only warning I get before the first lash rips into my skin like a ribbon of flame. My body jerks, but I gnaw my scream into submission, refusing to cut it loose. To give him the satisfaction of hearing me howl. Another whistling slash severs the air, flaying my flesh from shoulder to bowing spine. A tremble begins in the pit of my gut and spreads through my organs, my bones, across my ravaged skin as he lashes. 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 Red sprays, my body splitting over and over, until I can feel strips of me hanging loose, flopping around with every flinch from the relentless storm of blows. But no matter how hard he whips, the snap of sting is nothing compared to the agony I endured as Essie slipped away, as she released her final breath and the warmth leached from her limbs. As I looked at her one final time, wishing she'd grow wings and flutter into the sky so she could ball up and take her place amongst the moons where I'd be able to see her always, so I wouldn't have to say goodbye. Not really. So I absorb the blows, snarl through clenched teeth as my bladder loosens, beg that thing inside me not to surge again. This is my penance for failing Essie in so many ways, for believing I could love somebody from a distance, believing they wouldn't suffer the same fate as everyone who sinks past the calloused scabs on my heart. I wear the strikes of pain like armor slashed upon my body, the smell of my blood filling the room until I'm certain I'm drowning in it. Until the darkness clouding my vision finally wins the war. Diary entry. Eloin Nevon, age 9 phases, 5,030 phases after stone. The biggest moon plume I've ever seen keeps swooping through the sky, screeching. I think it's a female because the wispy tip of her tail is extra long and sleek, like Mommy's moon plume, not they. I think she's searching for this egg, mourning it, hunting us. I think that because she's silver like this egg, and I've never seen another moon plume that's such a metallic shade of gray. We could hide in the hatching hut, but we can't hide here, not properly. I'm worried she'll find us soon, then kill us for raiding her nest. I keep begging the egg to rock so I can pack all the ice around it that I've chipped off a nearby pillar over the cycles. Once the hatchling breaks free, I can take it inside the snow hut where it'll be safe with Hadeon until I work out what we're going to do next. How we're going to get back to Orithia. It seems impossible right now. Hadeon's not getting any better, and it's not just the moon plume that seems to be hunting us. I can hear a pack of doom quills somewhere nearby, like they can smell death in the air. They make the most horrible rattling sounds that jingle the silence and scare my heart, though I'm not scared for myself. I'm scared for this beautiful egg sitting in the snow in front of our makeshift hatching hut. It's like a little silver sun, throwing so much light. I use the light to write while I sit here, holding Hadeon's dragon-scaled dagger in my other hand. I've never held one before. Never wanted to. But if the doom quills get brave enough to attack, I'll have to protect the egg and Hadeon. But I don't like the thought of killing things. I don't want to kill anything. I really hope they don't get too close. Rave. Chapter 19. The feel of something splatting against my temple stirs me from a sleep riddled with fire and gulps of poisonous fear, a scream threatening to punch up my throat. My eyes pop open, teeth clamping down as I hiss breaths and wait for the fiery terror to stop wriggling. The smoky tendrils retreat, revealing my murky surroundings, my vision sharpening on the here. The now. My spine locks, blood chilling. I'm lumped in the corner of a cell. I'm alone in a cell. Bars slice up and down three sides of my small box of space, a wall of damp stone at my back, the low ceiling collecting moisture on its jagged face. A single drop lantern lords over each cell across from me and either side as far as I can see. The air a vile, potent mix of blood, vomit, excrement, and rotten flesh. bile threatens to charge up my throat. The enormity of everything that's come to pass since I woke in my sleep suite to knees panicked nudges now dumping upon me like an avalanche. A sudden tremble jars me to the bone, a fierce, untamable shake not born of the cold. Nor fear, nor pain. The terrible shake of a rattled soul. My teeth clank together, even my organs quake, and with this terrible full-body shudder comes the agonizing reminder of what wreck did to my back. I groan, remembering the way the whip snapped against my skin, over and over, adding to the relentless shudder that just won't stop. Looking past the oversized brown tunic shrouding the top half of my body, I see iron cuffs bound around my ankles with an interlocking chain. My wrists bear the same, the chain draped between them connected to the one between my feet with a stumpy length of metal, no doubt meant to stop me from doing anything but sit here and rot in my own filth. The dull ache in my shoulder tells me that what I assume is an iron pin is still deeply embedded in my body, probably festering. Shit. My hand comes up to pluck the stringy piece of what I also assume is Rex's finger tendon from between my chattering teeth. I flick it away, the motion making my entire back blaze, a serrated howl threatening to rip up my throat. Instead, I begin humming my calming song, hoping it'll soothe me from the inside out.
Thought you were dead!
A high-pitched voice squeaks at me from the cell to the right of mine, and my tremble abates so suddenly I almost believe I imagined it. I tilt my chin as best I can, half my vision slit as I look at the creature peering at me through the gloom with beady black eyes, furry gray claws wrapped around the bars separating us. A Woto, male, by the look of his long whiskers that are wiggly at the ends, unlike the females of their kind, with theirs straight like blades. Surprise, I rasp. His glossy black nose twitches, and my gaze drops to the yellow pronged teeth jutting from his maw, the incisors long and slightly curved, pinched together at the tip. His face is mostly shaded in wispy gray fur, a churn of wiry black hair curling around his paddled ears.
Your eye looks sore.
I make a noncommittal sound. Truth be told, it's the least of my concerns.
Name's Rook. What did they got you for?
He asks, releasing the bar to scratch behind his rounded ear, his gaze scraping across the dried blood on my fisted hands.
Doing bad things to bad folk, I think.
The gore that was on my skin suit suggested as much.
I heard them say you're going to trial with the Guild of Nobles.
I hack out a laugh that burns my hoarse throat.
Of course.
Not everyone gets an audience with the Guild. Only the ones they're deliberating between a public draw and quartering or tying up in the Colosseum. Guess I made the cut. No surprise there. Based on my interactions with Rec, there's no way the Guild isn't going to utilize this unique opportunity to lure more Ath to the surface. I guarantee that's the only reason they've deemed me worthy of a trial. To drag it out. Give them time to formulate a plan. Problem is, it might just work.
What brought you to this fine establishment? I ask, trying to distract myself from my slitting thoughts.
Stealing,
Rook says, rolling back, twisting his body into a knot. His clawed foot extends up, scratching the seemingly relentless itch behind his ear.
Isn't that why your lot is so valued? Why lock you up?
To punish my master.
Untangling himself, he scurries to the far corner of his cell and begins scratching at the stone in a flurry of motion, tilling up shards that scatter across the ground. My brows rise. He's ambitious. Good for him.
though I'm not sure why he's digging down. The only thing beneath us is the Velvet Trog's den. He'd be trading one death for another, though perhaps he'd prefer to die surrounded by Gore's trash and not the bars of a cell. Maybe I should dig too. A sob comes from across the hall, and I peer into the shadowed corner of the opposite cell, seeing the vague outline of a female bound in a quivering ball, her white garb shredded in places, blistered feet bare of shoes. What about her? Rook pauses, whiskers twitching as he looks over his shoulder at the female.
Refuse to truth tune for the crown, he squeaks out.
My chest packs full of sharp stones that wedge against my ribs. I think of the tents erected about the city, soldiers stationed around the perimeter and herding lines of trembling children through the flap, one at a time, to where a truth tune is always sitting, ready to sift through their heads to decipher whether or not they can hear any of the four elemental songs. There's always a carriage to the side, waiting to swallow the freshly beaded conscripts and trundle them off to Drelgod for training. Always a churn of weeping parents buckling beneath the knowledge that they may never see their gifted children again. Always a pour of other younglings, freshly labeled nulls leaving the tent with a bleeding ear, nursing the clipped flesh. I release a sigh. The sound of boots thumping down the hallway has Rook bunching up a frayed brown blanket and dashing it over the hole. He scurries toward the front of his cell, and I frown, noticing every other inmate except the truth tune doing the same thing. The reason becomes clear when rolling cartwheels squeal through the silence, the smell of gruel wafting to me. The same shit they serve up in the muck holes in the mines. The ache in my chest pangs so abruptly my breath snags, the familiar smell pinching at that raw, fleshy cleft in my heart. When Essie first came to me, plain gruel was one of the only things her sensitive belly could handle, being so used to the bland food she was able to steal in the Undercity. A black-haired guard with sharp eyes and a tailored beard stops before my cell, crouches, and shoves a board beneath the barred door. I frown, lifting my head off the ground enough to see the piece of parchment stretched across it, pinned down at the corners. He tosses a sharpened piece of coal through the bars, and I don't dare move fast enough to pluck it from the air before it has a chance to hit me in the face. Asshole. If you want me to draw you a doodle, you'll be happy to know your face is the perfect muse, I say, flashing him a toothy grin that makes my eye socket ache.
Sign for food, he grunts out. Thumbprint, too. Should you make it out of here alive, you'll have to pay for every meal consumed.
I snort laugh. Drawing a steadying breath, I edge up, teeth gritted, hissing through the searing pain, the flayed flesh on my back shifting at 100 different angles. An ooze of warm wetness seeps from my wounds as I ease forward, my gaze dragging over this small metal plaque nailed to the floor before my cell, stating its number. Maneuvering my shackled hand so I can grab the piece of coal, I scratch the tapered tip upon the parchment. Prisoner 73. I rub some coal onto my thumb, then press it against the parchment before sliding the board back under the door. The guard cuts me a condemning stare. What? I feign. Have I got something on my face? He extends his hand.
Cole, prisoner 73, now.
Fine, I gripe, tossing it through the bars. I'll rot from boredom before my trial even begins, and it'll be all your fault. He grunts, picks up the coal, and stalks back the way he came just as the slop cart reaches my cell. A much less decorated servant to the crown ladles a scoop of slimy gray goo into a wooden bowl he slides beneath the door. It skitters to a stop beside me, and the male slams a metal mug of water between the bars before pushing his cart farther down the hall, passing a bowl and mug to Rook next. I frown at the goo, back at the server. How am I supposed to eat it? He looks at me over his shoulder and growls,
"Stuff your face in it, for all I care."
So many assholes, so few fingers to count them all. My gaze roves to the cell on my left, where a male is using his hands to scoop the slop into his mouth. His skeletal frame is all bladed bones, fine hair covering his pale skin, bits of him draped with a shred of gray cloth. His sallow stare drifts to me, gruel dripping from the bristles of his wiry beard as he heaps another mound in his mouth. A shiver climbs my spine. I look at Rook, who's stuffing the end of his long face into the bowl, chowing it straight from the source. "Here," I say, using my foot to nudge my serve beneath the bars separating us, pushing it into his cell. His beady gaze swivels to me, widening.
You sure?
"Certain," I say, gaze flicking to his hidden hole in the back corner. "You need the energy more than I do." Love a good hope charge, futile as it is. Arm extending, the clawed tips of Rook's paw curl around the lip of my bowl, dragging it close.
Thanks,
he says, clumps of muck littering his furred face. "No problem." I edge back into the corner in slow, agonized shuffles, then lower myself to the ground, closing my eyes. Listening to the sloppy sounds, I pick at the skin down the side of my nails. My mind festers, thoughts churning at a ferocious speed, remembering another cell. Another time. A cell I was born into, in my own strange way, bonded with its walls and the smell and the female I shared it with. I had something to fight for, then. Somebody I loved and cherished. All I've got now is a wounded heart and this ravenous hunger for revenge that's as futile as Rook's hole in the ground. I'm trapped in a cell, shackled with iron, a pin in my shoulder, scheduled for a trial with the guild. The only way I